Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Like, I don't know who's more fired up after last night, Nuggets fans or Laker fans, because Laker Nation is throwing up the car flags and planning a parade after seeing what they saw last night. And believe me, there is a whole lot to talk about when it comes to the Clipper collapse, and we will. But not before we put the respect on the Nuggets that they so richly deserve, that they're still not getting. So before you do anything else, make damn sure you give the Nuggets and every last one of the Nuggets some bleeping credit. I mean, for real.
Give them some credit. I mean, for real.
They earned it. They earned every bit of it. From Tim Connolly and GM Calvin Booth to Michael Malone and his coaching staff, including Wes Unseld Jr., who got some love on this show earlier this week and on TV last night, to every single player on that roster. They earned it, just like they earned this rager in a makeshift locker room in Florida last night.
I've never been around a team like this, man. For real. Inspirational group. Love all y'all, man. We got work to do. We got work to do. Let's go to the finals.
Truth. Love these guys. Love these guys, and you know me. I hate to say I told you so. Actually, I don't. In fact, I can't wait to say I told you so, because I did tell you. I told you so. These Nuggets are not just a nice story. They're not just happy to be there. They're not a young team coming up. They're not a young team on the rise. In fact, they just gave a gigantic middle finger to the rest of the world about them being a so-called team of the future. They're a team for right now. They were the number 2 seed in the West last year, the number 3 seed this year. But for some reason, nobody seems to remember, or nobody seems to believe it or respect it, because almost everybody continued to sleep on these guys. Or as Michael Malone said in the buildup to the game, quote, "I almost feel like we're the Bad News Bears, and I'm Coach Buttermaker. We're a team that nobody really looks at and takes us seriously. And our guys, I think, have taken that personally." End of quote. Hell yes. He threw it back to old Coach Buttermaker. Love it. Yeah, unlike the New York Jets and their GM, who were crying about not getting respect, then went out and got curb stomped in week one, the Nuggets have every right to say it and take it personally. Because unlike the Jets, they're not a talentless disaster. And they went out and they backed it all up. And unlike the Clippers, they're tough as hell and clutch as hell. And it's not just that their biggest stars showed up when they needed it most, and the Clippers' biggest stars no-showed when they needed it most, and they did. Kawhi was nowhere last night. Pandemic P is a real thing. And I'll get to all that later on. But I could point to one Nugget after another and point out what each did and how they pulled this off. I could point to any one of these guys and the role they played. Like Paul Millsap standing up to the Clippers in Game 5 and letting everybody know Denver was not going to get punked. Like Gary Harris battling his ass off on defense. Like Jeremy Grant coming through time and time again. I'm going to state some facts. And even if you already know these facts, you're about to hear these facts again. As I mentioned yesterday, they showed up in Florida with 8 healthy players. 8. Not even enough to run a 5-on-5. 8. So I don't want to hear about how much adversity the Clippers had in the bubble. Denver showed up to the bubble with 8 guys. 8. Down 3-1 against Utah. Down 3-1 against the Clippers. 6-0 in elimination games. Down 16 in Game 5. They come back to win. Down 19 in Game 6. They come back to win. Down 12 last night. They not only come back to win, they come back to win and they hammer the Clippers. They led by 20 at one point in the fourth quarter. So they didn't just win that game. They humiliated LA. That's the type of beatdown that sticks to you forever. And I don't care who you are and what you had won coming in. That's the kind of beatdown that sticks to you forever. And the reasons for that are pretty simple. Nikola was the best player in the game. He was the best player in the series. It's just a fact. The Clippers, for all their talk about their alleged, legendary lockdown defense, had no answer for Joker. This dude truly is the definition of a unicorn, a straight stud. On Twitter, David Roth glossed him, quote, the marshmallow man. Check that, marshmallow king. It's a perfect description. I mean, my man's not exactly ripped, right? Not exactly shredded, but he was shredding the Clipper D. 16 points, 13 assists, 22 rebounds. 22 freaking rebounds. And he was doing stuff like this.
Craig has it on the high right side. Back over to Joker on the elbow. Give and go, Craig. Layup, good!
Great.
8-point lead for Denver, 34 seconds to go.
Joker is insane. He was doing that and he was doing this.
Denver basketball fresh out of the timeout. Nuggets lead it by 6 here late in the third quarter. Jamal Murray off to a cutting Jokic. Wrap around to Grant, the dunk, two hands. That's a triple-double for Nikola Jokic, his fifth in the playoffs.
The Marshmallow King is a freak. There has never been a player like him before. A 7-footer who can run the point, literally, kill you on the glass, punish you in the paint, and carve you from deep and make it all look so easy. But trust me, you can't do what he does. And the Clippers sure as hell couldn't stop what he does. I mean, LA, for all its talent, both on the roster and in that coaching staff, they could not figure out a way to stop this guy. He just kept carving them up. They had no answer. They had no adjustment. They just got bludgeoned by a marshmallow. Cause of death, blunt trauma. They found the murder weapon. It was a big old marshmallow. And if Jokic wasn't the best player in the series, and he was, then Jamal Murray was a close second. So while Kawhi and PG were disappearing on the big stage, Murray was ripping it. 40 points on 26 shots. Kawhi and PG had 24 points combined on 38 bricks. And while these guys were disappearing completely, Murray was walking into threes like this.
Beverly knocks it loose. Lou Williams just 2 of 9 from the field. Murray, long three-pointer. It's good! Jamal Murray from way downtown. It's a 15-point Nugget lead.
My man's doing that in the Game 7. I mean, absolutely fearless. Like the level of trust and confidence that he's got in himself, and his team and the coaches having him is off the charts. He's got 40-plus in 3 elimination games this postseason. The first ever to do that in league history. And on top of that, getting back and busting his ass on defense. Every single member of the Nuggets was doing the same. So the win was not just about their offense, it was about their defense. If it sounds like I'm hyped on these guys, it's because I'm hyped on these guys. And the fact that they locked the Clippers up at that end. Man, they were so far in the Clippers' heads. The Clipper players, like Paul George, were bricking wide open shots off the side of the backboard. Like I said, Pandemic P, it's a real thing. I mean, like, it's so cliche to talk about things like wanting it more, except Denver just wanted it more. Denver, I think, wants it more than anybody wants anything. And watching the Clippers, I'm not sure they wanted it at all. To put it another way, a way that my guy Tim Connolly might appreciate, the Nuggets showed up there last night like softball guy with the $500 Easton timing up the pitches, and they were mashing. In other words, Denver goes hard like softball guy. Like softball guy going hard into second base to break up a double play with a co-ed shortstop trying to make the turn. Never mind that the shortstop on the other team, if not a co-ed, is some dude in his mid-40s who just wanted to be outside and enjoy a beer or two. Yeah, now that guy's in the emergency room with a dislocated shoulder. Sorry, man. Softball guy is all about playing the game the right way. Always has been. Just like the Nuggets.
My favorite part of the show was when you talked about softball guys.
The Nuggets not only have that $500 bat but they're geared up, head to toe, stirrups, black wristbands, eye black, metal spikes, and the backwards sunglasses at night, just like softball guy. And don't get me wrong, the Clippers, they've got a real nice roster. There's a ton of talent on that roster, but that was a series between a roster and a team, and the team just beat the hell out of that roster. Honestly, I could not be more impressed with the Nuggets and less impressed with the Clippers, and I'm not sure what I'm more impressed with, the Nuggets' brilliance or the Clippers' catastrophic implosion. I think I'm going to go with the Nuggets' brilliance. Just be sure to give the Clippers credit for that meltdown. Losing is one thing, but losing like that in three straight elimination games is straight historic, even for the Clippers. Man, how nice was it to see teams back on the field over the weekend? Lucky for us, that was just week one. There is no better place to get in on all the action than with DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports. And to add to this week's excitement, DraftKings has millions of bucks in total prizes up for grabs. If you have not tried DraftKings yet, head to the App Store right now because you do not want to miss this. Draft your lineup right now. Feel the sweat like never before. Every run, pass, and catch means more with DraftKings. It's easy. You pick your lineup, you stay under the salary cap, and you see how your team stacks up against the competition. I'm telling you, nothing adds to the excitement of watching the game quite like having a shot at millions of bucks in prizes. DraftKings has paid out billions of dollars to winners since 2012, so they know a thing or two about cold, hard cash. So download the DraftKings app right now. Use the code ROME, and for a limited time, new users can get a free shot at millions of bucks in prizes this week. Do not miss out on the week two action. Enter the code ROME. Get a free shot at millions of bucks in prizes with that first deposit. Code ROME. Only at DraftKings. Make it rain. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Jeff Collins is my guest. Jeff, good to talk to you again. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Man, I love that, too. Hey, listen, I want to reset. You and I spoke face-to-face back on the week before Super Bowl in Atlanta. I could tell right then and there. I could already hear it in your voice right now. The passion and enthusiasm you have for being back in the 404. I want to get into the win over Florida State and what the offseason has been like for you in the program. But first, now that you've been in that job for a full year, how much does it mean to you to be the head coach at Georgia Tech?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. Sometimes I have to pinch myself. Like, I'm literally sitting in the north end zone of Bobby Dodd Stadium, looking out on Grant Field. I see the world headquarters of Coca-Cola right outside my window, world headquarters of Georgia Pacific. I mean, it's just the skyline of Atlanta, the city that I'm born and raised in, literally is right outside the window of where I work. It's a dream come true. Love the guys that I'm coaching, love the guys that I get to work with every single day. And we're building something that's very, very special here in my hometown.
Well, there's no doubt. Now, the offseason obviously was so unique and so different, so challenging. I'm curious what it was like for you in the program. How did you and the coaching staff go about helping your guys out in terms of COVID and the issues relating to social justice?
You might have to book me for about 2 hours, man, because there was so much that went into it. Our staff did a great job, but we were away from each other for 3 months. We obviously, like everybody in the world, got well versed on Zoom calls, but there wasn't a week that went by during those 3 months that we were away from each other that I didn't have a personal connection with every player on our team while we were away. You know, we would have Zoom calls by position I would pop in. We would have Zoom calls with the various cohorts that we were broken into, and I would hop on those calls just to make sure we had really good connections, built relationships throughout. The entire time, you know, we couldn't make workouts mandatory, but I've got a young, energetic coaching staff. They were actively doing the workouts too, sending videos, busting each other's chops about who's lifting more, who's working harder. So we had a really good vibe going, even though we were in the midst of a global pandemic and away from each other. And then, you know, the middle toward the end of May, all the social justice issues that kept popping up, and we had long conversations, Zoom meetings with our guys, really opening up and sharing our feelings, how we can affect the world to make it a better place, play our role within, within the city, within our communities, on our team, just to develop relationships, build bonds, and hopefully make this world a better place through our influence.
We are talking to Georgia Tech head football coach Jeff Collins. You know, for you lay it out like that, and then you consider for a time that there was some doubt as to whether or not there would even be a football season this year. So how did it feel to finally take the field against Florida State Saturday?
Yeah, that was awesome. You know, there was a lot of doubt. We had OTAs for about 2 weeks before we even started camp. And even the first 2 or 3 weeks of camp, there was still uncertainty. You know, I still remember at one point during preseason camp, we hop on an emergency ACC head coaches meeting at like 10 o'clock at night just to discuss how everything's going, how everybody's adjusting, how all of our teams, how all of our players are doing, following protocols, and the positivity that we had in our programs, and, you know, trying to make this thing work while still making sure the health, safety, and well-being of our student athletes was the number one concern in every single thing that we did. But then you get closer to game week, and it's like, okay, we're really doing this. And then we got into the game, and I'll be honest with you, Jim, in that second half, it was such a good feeling to just be worrying about ball and not be worrying about keeping their distance, wearing their mask, all of the things that we've had to do for 6 weeks and even 6 months throughout this thing. We were just out there playing ball, coaching ball, and our guys fought and played with passion and energy and physicality and all those things. And we come back from a 10-point deficit at half to come back to win 16-13. It was an awesome experience. Couldn't have been prouder of a group of guys just getting to the game, first of all, but then tapping it off with a dub was awesome.
Talking to Georgia Tech head football coach Jeff Collins, it is awesome. And just for proper context, the program had not won an ACC road game to start the season since 1996. So you touched on it, but what did you make of how your players dealt with everything you laid out in the offseason, the way they poured themselves into the program, and then when they could have tapped out mentally early on when things did not go well, they didn't. How do you feel about the way they showed up and the way they finished?
Well, I don't know if you caught it at the end, and I was hoping nobody did, but actually at the end of the game, the clock struck zero. We win, we celebrate. It was about 10 seconds in, and I try to consider myself a tough guy, Jim, but I kind of broke down on the sidelines, got very emotional just thinking about all the investment, all the hard work, all the attention to detail, how much they bought in, followed what we asked them to do, and then they came out, did it all, and were successful. Nobody really understands what it took to get us to that game. And just all of those emotions, you know, came up. Another piece was my wife and daughter were not able to be there because they're, you know, we're keeping them away and they're not making the road trips out of the health and safety of our bubble, of our team. And obviously not having them there to share such a special moment, you know, that hit me too. But then once we started singing with the band and dancing in the locker room, I got over that stuff real quick and got back to being a tough guy and having a good time.
Love it. Georgia Tech head football coach Jeff Collins joining us. All right, for those who do not know, what is Club 10-10-10, and what was the thinking behind that in the offseason?
You know, we had one of the most historic transitions in the history of college football, or definitely the last 50 years. We took over a team that had run the triple option, recruited to the triple option, and we understood going in there was going to be some growing pains, and there were some things that we went through last year developing the program, setting the groundwork for all the success that we're going to have. But as you get toward the end of the year and you start figuring out concrete ways that we have to get better, and we go through the last game in December and into January and the guys get back, and I just realized that we had to gain 10 pounds per man on this roster. We had to get bigger. We had to get more physical. We had to get more stronger. The other piece of it is we were 3 games short of going to a bowl game. 3 games were decided by either less than 10 inches or less than 10 feet, whether it be fumbling on the goal line or whether it be letting go of the rope right before halftime on a squid kick, or another one that we fumbled on the goal line too going in, is if we make those plays that are 10 feet or 10 inches, we gain 10 pounds per man, we're going to be a pretty good team. And we started it off, Jim, you would love this. The first meeting we had, the first day back in January, we had a freaking house party. Now, this is a team that went 3-9 last year. but we had a house party to set the vision of what Club 1010 was going to be. We had a DJ. We had strobe lights. We did a workout in the stadium, basically touched every seat in the stadium and worked out and, you know, carried that through the off season. And that was the mantra going into everything that we did, even during quarantine. We got to gain 10 pounds. We got to find those 10 inches, got to find those 10 feet. And that was just resounding all the way through. And the cool thing is we go down to halftime down 10-0. And we just say, hey guys, this is what we worked all off season for. We're down 10. We got to find a way to make it up. And just so proud of the players, so proud of the staff, that they were able to find that 10 points and then some to get the win.
Now, you're right. I do love that. Jeff Collins joining us. We're talking Georgia Tech football. Something else I love. Your wide receiver, Malachi Carter, told the Athletic, I should say, quote, even down to getting places 30 minutes early has just been second nature to everybody now. He added, quote, that you really got everybody's mindset as we've really grown into really grown men and really see how this is a business and we all treat it as such. End of quote. Help me with that. How did you get these guys to make those kind of changes in mindset and help them understand that, hey, man, we're looking for you to be men. You got to grow into men.
Yep. Well, the second, so we get into the locker room, we're partying. I actually have my wife and my daughter on FaceTime on the phone as I'm going in. Music's playing. We're dancing, jumping around. I shut it off. I get up, and I just, everything goes quiet. And I just told the guys, culture wins. All the things that we believe in, all the things that we preach, all the things that we emphasize came to pass, and that's why we won the game, because the culture in our locker room, the culture on our team, the things that we believe in. One of the pieces, too, we talk about this all the time, leave everywhere you go better than you found it. So when we leave our locker room, so we practiced this morning, and I guarantee you we're about an hour and a half out of practice. Most locker rooms are a complete disaster. There's stuff everywhere. There's tape everywhere. I guarantee you if I walk down the locker room right now, it is spotless. Because that's just how we do things. We leave everywhere we go better. We found at the hotel the night before the game, one of my favorite moments. We win the game. I do press. I go take a shower. I go get on the bus. I'm eating my Chick-fil-A sandwich with it, which is founded in headquarters right here in Atlanta, by the way. I'm sitting there eating my Chick-fil-A sandwich. I have a leadership group text. So there's about 19 of the seniors in the single digits on our team. I get a text from number zero, Jamin Brooks. And he said, hey, guys, great win. That's not how we leave a locker room. There was tape on the floor.
Wow.
There was people that didn't put their bags in the laundry bins. That's not how we do things around here. And for that quote, understanding the moment, understanding the importance of who we are and what we're all about, the things that got us to have that success, you can't lose sight of them even though you get the victory, even though you're blowing up on social media. You still have to do all the little things and all the details that make our culture special, that make our culture different. And I thought that was an awesome moment for us.
It's an amazing moment, Jeff. That'd be like my 14-year-old son or 15-year-old son coming up to me and saying, hey, Dad, that's not how we leave the master bedroom. Except that would never happen. That would never happen in my house. So I understand what you're saying. Last thought, then you got number 14 UCF on Saturday. When you look at them, what concerns you the most, and how do you go about preparing your team for that challenge?
Yeah, and I was coaching the AAC when I was the head coach at Temple, went against them twice, had a really good game the last year we were there, Halloween, Thursday night, primetime, ESPN went down to the wire. They're one of the top 10 programs in the country over the last 3 years. I happen to have coached at UCF in the 2008-2009 season. So I have a tremendous amount of respect for that program from being there as a coach, tremendous amount of respect for that program as coaching against them, and just to see the success, how hard they play, the speed, the innovative things they do offensively and defensively, and they've got great players that are really perfect for the system that they run. So it's a huge challenge. They're well-deserved being ranked, you know, one of the top teams in the country, and we understand that we've got a huge challenge. Coming in here on Saturday, primetime, ABC, national TV. And one of the cool things, too, Jim, when the schedule got adjusted, right, we're going to play 10 ACC games. We're only going to have a choice to play one non-conference game. I thought it was huge of our administration to keep that game on the schedule. because a lot of teams in college football did not keep high-caliber teams like UCF on their schedule. I thought it was a big statement from our administration, a big challenge for our players and our coaches, knowing that we've got such a big-time team with great players, great coaches coming into Bobby Dodd Stadium, coming to the 404 on Saturday.
I see you working. They are ranked 14th. You've got number 14 UCF at Georgia Tech on Saturday, and we were talking Georgia Tech football here in the jungle, and it feels great. Jeff, so good to have you back. Great to hear your energy and your passion, man. That was fun. That was a blast. Good luck this weekend, and it's always good to have you on this show.
Thanks, Jim. Anytime, bud.
Now, if you're a Clipper fan from back in the day, whether you grew up rooting for Michael Cage or you had a Keith Kloss jersey, or maybe you jumped on that bandwagon last summer, this is going to hurt you a hell of a lot more than it hurts me. In fact, it's not going to hurt me at all because I don't root. I don't care who wins or loses. All I care about is having something to talk about, and the Clippers, sure as hell, have given me something to talk about. There is a word for what you witnessed last night. It's a word that I do not use very often because I understand what the word means. It's a word that is one of the worst things you could say about an athlete, about an individual, about a team. That word is choke. I don't throw that around lightly. I think about that long and hard before I use that word. So I thought about it long and hard. That was a complete and utter choke job. A choke of epic proportions. A triple choke. Three chokes stacked on top of each other. Up 3-1 in that series with a double-digit lead in Game 5. They choked. Up 3-2 in the series with a double-digit lead in Game 6. They choked again. Tied 3-3 in the series with a double-digit lead in Game 7, and they choked yet again. And you don't have to dig too hard to find out who the biggest chokers were. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. Pandemic P was in full effect last night. He went 4 of 16 for 10 points. He had more turnovers than made baskets. And it wasn't just that he was missing shots. He wasn't getting anywhere close.
The Clippers right now have no answers for the Nuggets.
They've gotten a number of second shots, though.
George, way off. It's the side of the backboard. And Jokic with yet another rebound.
I mean, that was a fairly wide open look. And he slammed it off the side of the backboard. Who does that? How do you do that? Then again, it is pretty hard to hit a three when you've got both your hands wrapped around your own throat. And as bad as PG was shooting, Kawhi was even worse. 6 of 22 for 14 points. 6 of 22 in a Game 7. At times, I forgot this guy was on the floor altogether, which is totally and completely unacceptable. Like, if Kawhi is the player that everybody makes him out to be, he can't be disappearing like that. Unless there's something going on that we don't know about, he cannot be vanishing like that in the second half of a Game 7. I mean, seriously, where the hell were Paul George and Kawhi Leonard last night? Completely and utterly manned down. Shrank from the moment. When the going got tough, they split. They couldn't handle it. We've been told all along that LA was built for moments like this, but they weren't. They crumbled. They fell apart. They imploded. As was noted before the game, Kawhi and PG have never faced that kind of pressure and scrutiny that LeBron has for nearly his entire career. And they pretty much have skated on that. They've gotten the reps for being great players, but they haven't had to put up with the kind of pressure and criticism and scrutiny that LeBron has. And the moment they faced some of that pressure, they fell apart. They crumbled. They blew double-digit leads in 3 straight games, and they got bounced in the second round. And no, they're not the only ones to blame, but hell yes, that's where we're going to start. Yes, there was plenty of blame to go around, but that's where we start. Now, the supporting cast, they didn't do jack either. As great of a coach as Doc Rivers is, it's never a good look to have not one, not two, but 3 blown 3-1 series leads on your resume. Doc is the only coach with that line on his resume. Now, Doc did own it after the game, and Doc is going to take plenty. And enough that you have to wonder, I think, whether or not Doc might actually be on thin ice there. Knowing his owner, maybe he brings him back for another year, but I think it's fair to wonder if Doc is on thin ice. I mean, one thing to lose, but to lose that way. Like, Doc did not have a good series at all. The Clippers were not ready for the Nuggets. Hell, I'd argue they weren't ready for the bubble. And a lot of that is on Doc, the guy who talked about winning the wait. Just make sure that Pandemic P and Kawhi do not skate here. At some point when a team is melting down in three straight games, a superstar has to stand up and take over. That superstar says, look, man, get the hell out of my way or get on my back. I've got this. And he carries the team. Neither of those guys did that at any point. They melted. They vanished. You think LeBron would ever let something like that happen on his watch? Hell, you think Jimmy Butler would ever let something like that happen on his watch? Hell no. Yet these two dudes were nowhere to be found when it mattered most. These two dudes did nothing to stop the bleeding. Nothing. It was like the Nuggets were playing against five random guys in black jerseys. Not like the Nuggets were playing against two future Hall of Famers. So yeah, I'm sure Doc is going to get some blame because the coach always gets the blame. But Kawhi and Pandemic P deserve way more than he does. Like, if you want to come for Giannis when Milwaukee bows out in the second round, you better come for Kawhi and PG when the Clippers choke out in the second round. If you hammered LeBron in the past, you better be hammering Kawhi and PG right now. You want more evidence? Pandemic P and Kawhi went 0-for-11 in the fourth quarter. 0-for-11 and no points in the fourth quarter of a game seven. Like the most damning thing ever. And it's not like they were showing up on the defensive end either. It's not like they were doing other things to help their team. If you're an alleged superstar and an alleged Hall of Famer and an alleged two-way great, and you do that, you're going to take plenty of heat. And you're going to deserve it. Jamal Murray had more points in the game than the entire Clippers team had in the second half. So, what the hell do you tanks have to say for yourselves? What do you have to say for yourselves after an effort like that? Man, you better have some good answers to the hard questions. And of course, they did not. Lou Williams was asked, Lou, what's up? What happened?
I think a lot of the issues that we ran into, talent bailed us out. Chemistry didn't. And this series, it failed us.
Yeah, there's something to that, I guess. Like the fact that they would just go to sleep in this series and the Dallas series, and then Kawhi or Pandemic P would bail them out. And that was a quote-unquote strategy that worked until it didn't. Yeah, I guess. How about this from Kawhi?
Just couldn't make no shots. I feel like we got some good looks. That's when it comes like to the team chemistry, just knowing, you know, what we should run to get the ball in spots, or just if someone's getting doubled or they're packing the paint, trying to make other guys make shots, then we got to know the exact spots we need to be in. And, just got to carry over and, you know, just get smarter with the team. You got to get smarter. Basketball IQ, got to get better.
Basketball IQ, got to get better. Nope. Sorry. That's not good. When you're a superstar and you go 1 of 11 from the field in the second half, that's not about getting better at basketball IQ. You don't have to be smarter to go 2 for 11 or 3 for 11. Man, you got to make shots. Yeah, and I get it. Sometimes the ball won't go down. Sometimes the ball will not go in the hoop. But then you better get stops at the other end, and that was not happening either. I'm not even done with these guys yet. I haven't even gotten to Pandemic P's takes, which are even worse. Some quick reaction before I end hour number one. Dear Jim, wore the Nuggets for racking up a fourth quarter lead that even Vic Fangio couldn't screw up. Luke and Fort Collins. Hey Jim, the Clippers choked. Signed, Mama Cass. Mike in Buffalo, concise AF. Hey, Jim, the Clippers got clipped. Signed, Talk Radio Sports Update Guy. Hey, check this out. Are you looking for some new content? Peacock is the new streaming service from NBC Universal. Great entertainment is finally free. Peacock has live sports, daily highlights, timely docuseries, and exclusive access to Premier League. And the best of live events, 2020-2021 Premier League season, with over 175 exclusive matches live streamed on Peacock. Plus, coverage of the U.S. Open live from Wingfoot from September 17th through the 20th. Exclusive streaming destination of the 2021 Olympics as well. Real stories, beautifully told documentaries that tell the otherwise untold stories of grit, perseverance, and triumph behind the athletes we love. I'm talking about the best of streaming, best of TV. You can watch for free and upgrade for more on your TV, tablet, or phone. Go to peacocktv.com to download and start streaming now. We're talking to Jared Cook. Man, how good did it feel just to be back on the field and to come out with a win over a divisional opponent?
Yeah, it felt really good. Like you said, we've been, you know, well, the whole world's been battling COVID this whole offseason with no OTAs and kind of a refurbished camp. But it felt good to be back out there on the field with the guys and just clicking on all cylinders, especially against a pretty good opponent opening up week one.
Saints tight end Jared Cook, my guest. Early in the fourth quarter, Jared, Drew Brees hit you with a big pass down the sideline, and that set up an Emmanuel Sanders touchdown. Can you take me through the play? What did you see on that play, and how good did it feel to have that moment on a really critical drive?
I saw cover two shell, and it looked like the corner that I was running the go on. It looked like he was trying to trap inside, and a lot of people thought the play was over. And his eyes were inside, with bailing to with his butt to the sideline, and I just kind of kept running. And once I looked back, I saw the ball was in the air, and I knew I had a couple of steps on him, and just caught it and did my best to get up the sideline. But there was a huge play for us, and one that just kept the chains moving and it got us down in the field position into the red zone. So it's exciting, man, and that was a huge play for Drew to be able to get down the field and to find me.
That was an enormous play. Jared Cook is joining us. We just ran that back on CBS Sports Network. And then after the game, Drew said, quote, "I probably would say that I played awful. Certainly we are used to playing at a much higher level offensively and especially in the passing game, so we'll get back on track," end quote. I mean, yeah, week one, Jared, right? So maybe there are things to work on. But what's it say about this team that the offense might not have been firing on every single cylinder, at least as he puts it, and you still beat a division opponent by double digits?
Man, like you said, you know, it's week one. So, you know, getting all the jitters out, getting all the cobwebs off. But, you know, I thought we did good in a lot of different categories. You know, trying to hold our penalties down and just playing smart offensive football. We kind of got off to a slow start in the beginning, but we just stayed with it and just kept on being resilient throughout the game and making plays, and that's what it's all about. So as the weeks continue to roll and as the season continues to go on, we just need to make sure that we're continuing to play our best ball each week in and week out.
Jared Cook joining us. You know, it seems so unusual to be in the Superdome without having that usual fan support. In fact, you've talked about how when the crowd's not there, you've got to bring your own juice. How do you go about doing that? And then how important is that to maintain throughout the entire year?
Man, you continue to find confidence in your teammates like always. If somebody does a good job, we're the cheerleaders now for your teammates. You have to be vocal about it. We're all on the same team when it comes to that, and we have to big each other up because there are no fans to kind of help bring us along. So we just bring each other along and make sure that we're all in the same car for the same ride. And that enthusiasm and that energy is important, and it matters in this game. So you want to play this game with passion, and you want to be able to show that on the field whenever you line up and make a big play.
We're talking to Jared Cook. You know, you're in your second season with the Saints now. I'm curious, how would you describe the relationship and the chemistry that you have with Drew Brees, and then how much deeper is it now versus this time last year?
My relationship with Drew is great. You know, he's a very vocal leader on the team, and also a guy that leads by example. one of the first ones in the building, one of the last to leave. He's always working on his body, working on his game. He's always in the film room, by himself, getting extra film. So it's just been awesome just to be around him. We had, like you said, it's my second year, and we had a chance last year to kind of get our feet wet a little bit, start a little bit later than what we would have liked to. But this year, it's been great going through camp and actually having a second season and already having a playbook under my belt has been a lot better. And we've been able to kind of bypass a lot of those initial woes that I had last year and just go ahead and delve deeper into the playbook and get things clicking a little bit faster this year. So that's just been awesome, especially working with Drew. He makes everything easier.
We're talking to Jared Cook. You know, you say that, but the fact of the matter is you're coming off two straight Pro Bowl seasons. You're now in your 12th NFL season. You're playing some of your best football of your entire career. You know, the old way of thinking was that age was not necessarily a good thing, but you're playing at this level and you're reaching new levels deep into your career. How do you explain that?
Man, it's just all about taking care of your body, taking care of the physical and the mental aspects of the game. And just continuing to stay sharp and stay fresh. I've had some good coaches lately that have helped me kind of step my game up and accomplish things that I, like you said, that I haven't accomplished earlier in my career. And it's just all about resilience and persistence, just staying after it and continue to always have that fresh mindset that you're always going to get better at something. And I think that's one thing that's helped me kind of improve and keep getting better, just having that fresh mindset that you always have something to improve on and you never can be satisfied.
I mean, how do you do that? I was going to say, that's the amazing thing to me, that when you put yourself through what you put yourself through, and anybody who plays that game for 12 years the way you have, mentally, physically, man, it is so demanding. The grind is so intense. I don't think any of us have any idea what it's like to be out there. So how do you maintain that fresh mindset?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It is intense. It's just about having a strong mind and that will to always compete. I think that's the fun part about this game, is lining up on Sundays and being able to compete. So as long as you have your mind strong and fresh throughout the week, and then, you know, you're always ready for that Sunday competition and that Sundays smell different, they feel different. Playing this game, that's what you look forward to. So I just think having the right mindset for Sundays is always going to keep you in that mindset.
I mean, Jared, it seems to me like everybody's going to love Sunday, right? Of course you love Sunday, but it's everything you have to do Monday to Saturday to get ready for Sunday. Like, if you had to guess, and again, I want to make the point, you're playing at a really high level right now, so you don't have to make this decision. But in the end, in the final analysis, what do you think is going to go first? Like, your athletic ability or your will to prepare? Do you have any idea which would go first?
I have no idea. I'm not looking forward to either one of them, I tell you
right.
that, though.
I respect that. Listen, last thought, you spent 2 years with the Raiders before coming to New Orleans. Now you're getting ready to head to Vegas to play the Raiders in their first home game. So what kind of thoughts do you have as you get ready for that matchup?
I'm excited. I played out in Oakland. It's a new team in Las Vegas, but, you know, some of the same pieces that were there when I was still there. And I'm excited. They got a good defense, a fresh secondary, a lot of young guys, and a pretty good D-line. So it'll be good to go up against Coach Gruden and see Derek Carr a little bit and just see what we can do against their defense.
Before I go to break, I want to talk about something that happened at the end of Miami and Boston. You know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about big moments on big stages that require big calls. You know, like sometimes the play-by-play is just as memorable as, you know, the play. Because you have a pairing of an amazing visual moment with a world-class, spontaneous, hopefully, organic narration. And you can't beat that. Like, if it's a great moment, but you don't have somebody great behind the microphone to depict that moment, the moment's not as great, right, in and of itself. As an example, Vin Scully. Vin Scully calling Gibby's one-legged pinch hit World Series bomb.
High fly ball into right field. She is gone! In a year that has been so improbable, the
like a perfect call. Perfect. Or Vern Lundquist on 16 with the big cat at the 05 Masters.
Well, here it comes. Oh, my goodness. Have you seen anything like that?
Not bad. Not this. I mean, nothing is. How about Al Michaels with this at the 80 Olympic Games?
11 seconds. You've got 10 seconds. The countdown going on right now. Morrow up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
Even the ultimate pro Al was hyped and excited because there really was nothing like that. You see me working? I mean, I can do this all day long. The best moments in sports can be made and are often made even better with legendary and corresponding calls. Last night's stunner. I mean, holy hell. One of those where were you when game-saving rejections by Heat center Bam Adebayo. Now, we know about Bam. This guy can absolutely just leap out of the gym. His athleticism is just legendary. But what an amazing, amazing moment. What an amazing block that was in that moment. And it sounded like this on ESPN.
Working against Butler, got downhill, couldn't punch it. Bam says, get it out of here.
That's a really nice call by Mark Jones. A really nice call on a play that is already being called one of the greatest defensive plays in NBA history. And if it's not one of the greatest, then you got a problem with you, if that's what you think. It's a really amazing block, and that's a great call. But as good as Mark Jones was and is, I don't know, man. The Spanish one on ESPN Deportes may have been just as good, if not better.
De nuevo, Jason Tatum. En la penetración, viva por la volcada. Y Adebayo con el tapón, Miami.
Now we're cooking. In fact, why don't we keep it international? Let's check out the Russian version.
Derek Jones против Тейтума. Тейтум лезет под Джимми.
Нет! Нет! Бэм Адебайо! С одним из самых крутых блокшотов в истории плей-офф NBA.
I have no idea what those guys were saying, but I love it. Passion and energy is a universal language. And those Russian announcers sure as hell had both. Now, let us go back to our native tongue for the call on local Heat radio.
Tatum trying to get space. Tatum all the way in. Tatum blocked at the rim by Bam! And Bam throws it and gets it into the hands of Derek Jones Jr. What a block by Bam Adebayo!
Not bad. Pretty exciting. Seemed like the outlet pass kind of got in the way of that jubilation. That's all right. I mean, you got to do your job. You got to call the action. You have to call what you're seeing. I understand. There was a lot happening. So what you have there are four very good, but very different calls. Four very different broadcasts. I'm not taking anything from any of them. And it's always hard to do so in the moment, right? But none of them match the excellence of the play itself. And look, don't get this twisted. Again, this is a really hard thing to do. We're talking about arguably the best block in NBA history. So it's not an easy task to instantly improv a narration that is just as good, especially on something that improbable. I mean, who saw that coming? There was no way that that dunk was not going to be finished. And basketball is fast. Like, there's no marinating a home run with a long trip around the bases or slow tracking a chip shot making its way to the hole or a hockey game with the clock winding down. Man, that was bam, bam. No pun intended. So the play was not over after Bam blocked Tatum. So again, not easy to be as good on the headsets as Bam was on that play. Not a knock on anybody. But let me tell you something. If you want to go to a pro, if you want to go to somebody who's been there before, if you want to go to a guy who has called game-changing NBA moments while somehow balancing a job that is demanding, and being a father to, I don't know, like 12? If you want to go to a guy who is secretly moonlighted as a freelance play-by-play announcer on terrestrial radio, done it for years without his boss knowing, me, why don't we go to the legend? Why don't we go to the GOAT? Many of you do not know that Alvin DeLauro was a award-winning point guard in high school who won a state championship. Even fewer of you seem to know that Alvin DeLauro is a legendary and iconic play-by-play man. Do you know that he was behind the mic last night for that block? Maybe you don't. If you do, and you heard it, you've already been indulging in the greatest of all treats. If not, you're about to. That block was unbelievable. Alvin's call of the block, even better.
116-114 Heat. Williams inbounds to Tatum. Tatum, top of the arc. Butler switches. The clock at 7. Tatum, working against Butler, has a step. Gonna do it himself.
Wait, what's this? Bam Adebayo, rejection!
Dude, no. Bam Adebayo.
Get that out of here. Wham, bam, no slam. Thank you, ma'am. That is ridiculous.
Holy mother bleeping hell. Did I hear what I think that I just heard? Alvin, Costas, Scully, Michaels, DeLauro strikes again. Am I stroking out, or did Alvin DeLauro just call that block the way I think that he called that block?
116-114 Heat. Williams inbounds to Tatum. Tatum, top of the arc. Butler switches. The clock at 7. Tatum, working against Butler, has a step. Gonna do it himself.
Wait, what's this? Bam Adebayo, rejection!
Dude, no. Bam Adebayo. Get that out of here. Wham, bam, no slam. Thank you, ma'am. That is ridiculous.
Dude, no words. You want to talk hashtag speechless. Listen to him. Getting loose with four-letter bombs? A ridiculous reset. Time running down on the clock. That must have been on satellite. A four-letter bomb like that. Man, I love it. I love it. He obviously was on satellite or some internet affiliate. And again, moonlighting off of the clock. If you're new around here, you might be wondering what the hell you just heard. That's my engineer. Noted quiet man, Alvin DeLauro, on the call of last night's Heat-Celtics game. This is not the first time we've heard him calling NBA games. Again, there's some weird stuff going on with my crew. I mean, there are things that members of the XR4TI do in their side hustles that I would never have an issue with. I just never knew about. Literally. I can almost go to every single person on my staff, and they've done wild things professionally that I did not know about. But nothing more so than Alvin being an NBA play-by-play person on the side. I didn't even know that. For instance, a few years back, he called that LeBron buzzer beater that I heard in my car driving around the 626 one night. And the only reason I'm not going to play that is because I do not want to take away from this.
Tatum, top of the arc. Butler switches. The clock at 7. Tatum, working against Butler, has a step. Gonna do it himself.
Wait, what's this? Bam Adebayo, rejection! Dude, no. Bam Adebayo.
Get that out of here. Wham, bam, no slam. Thank you, ma'am. That is ridiculous.
I mean, that is incredible. Understand this about Alvin. He says maybe 8 words a year. He worked here maybe 8 years before he spoke to me. The fact that this guy is moonlighting as a freelance NBA play-by-play announcer behind everybody's back is bewildering. And the fact that he's that good at it is even more astonishing. But let's keep the main thing, like I always say, that call that we just heard does in fact have a seat at the table with the Miracle on Ice, the shot heard around the world. Just when I thought that Bam's block would not get the accompaniment that it deserves, Alvin steps up to the mic and he delivers. Well done, kid. Well freaking done.
That is ridiculous.
Dabo Swinney is my guest. Dabo, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. Hope you're doing well.
Doing great, Coach. Great talking to you and great to hear your voice. Let me ask you this.
Sorry I was a little late there, but glad we were able to catch back up.
Absolutely. Good to have you back. So I spoke to a number of head coaches this past week who talked about how emotional they were either before the season opener or after it because of everything that went into making sure these games came off. For instance, Jeff Collins of Georgia Tech talked about the fact earlier today that people have no idea how hard everybody worked throughout the offseason just to get there. So my question for you, what kind of emotions were you feeling before Saturday's game and then after it, and how different did that opener feel to you compared to others?
Man, so many emotions. I mean, it was an amazing experience. I told our team, after the game, I've been a part of a lot of opening games and a lot of good games and good wins and things like that in my 12th year as the head coach. But I'll never forget that one ever. That was as special a moment as I've had, and I mean that with all my heart. You know, just simply because of all that it took to get there. I mean, you know, we were in the middle of spring ball in March, and all of a sudden the world shuts down. You don't see anybody till June, and then it was voluntary. And then by the time you get back going in July, you don't even know if you're going to play. And then you don't have a schedule, and then you don't know when you're going to start. But yet, and then you have all kinds of things going on in the world, and the virus, and you know, all that's just. I mean, it was just crazy, and still is. But somehow, some way. We were able to push through all that. And I told our guys really back in May, I said, you know what? I said, the one thing I know is we're all dealing with some unprecedented things here, but if there's ever a program built for this, it's us, you know, because we have an incredibly strong culture here, and that's won the day for us. And I feel like that always gives us an edge. And as I told them back in May, I said, this is going to either be an advantage for some teams or a disadvantage. And it's going to be all about what you're made of. You know, it either shines you up or grinds you up. And we're made of the right stuff. We got the right people. We got the right culture. We got the right commitment. And whenever we do get back, it needs to be evident, you know, that what we've been doing when nobody was watching, you know, that's what wins championships. And we've always said that. Champions are made and championships are won when the stands are empty. And, you know, that may just be the case for real this year because – you know, we played in front of nobody, but it was an amazing, emotional night. Our guys were so excited and ready to play, rose to the occasion. And once it kicked off, honestly, there could have been 100,000 people there or nobody there. I mean, it was I couldn't tell the difference because we were all so into what we were doing and so excited to play, and it was so much fun to see them play because they've worked incredibly hard. The entire organization, everybody from top to bottom to get us to that point. So, you know, we're really excited. Our guys are doing a great job, and hopefully we can continue that and have the type of season we want to have.
It's a great response. Dabo Swinney joining us, your guy Trevor Lawrence. I mean, all of your guys, but Trevor Lawrence certainly locked in. 22 of 28, 351 yards. He had a total of 3 touchdowns. You and I have talked over the years about how special he is. But how much has he grown from year to year since joining the program?
Yeah, it's amazing, and that's the best part of, you know, what I get to do is, you know, you meet these guys when they're 15, 16, and it's just so cool, you know, to see them transform. I've got 3 sons, so I've lived that in my own house too, but just to get to see that over and over and over, and here's a guy, again, I met him in the 9th grade, and now watching him, he's engaged now to his high school sweetheart and all that stuff, but his first year, he just came in and was trying to earn the respect of his team. And his second year, he wanted to be the leader of the offense. And this year, he's the leader of the entire team. And so it's been a natural progression for him. Leadership comes easy to him. He's an incredibly humble young man. He really is. I always say he looks like Hollywood, but he's the most low-maintenance, humble guy you'll ever coach and loves to be coached, loves it, loves to prepare. He doesn't have to play a snap, didn't have to play. And this guy's out there leading the charge. You know, hey, we want to play college football. Nobody's making us do anything. And, you know, that's just who he is. That's just who he is. I mean, the guy has no fear. And, again, his just pure love of the game, his love of where he's playing, his love of his teammates. I mean, it's just a joy to watch him. And, I mean, is he special? Oh, my goodness. So he's just mentally matured over the years, but then physically where he is just from a pure physical standpoint, 220-something pounds, his strength, everything. It's been a complete transformation from the first time I met him, and he's got total command of what he's doing. He's a hard guy to fool post-snap, and that allows us to really have a lot of flexibility with what we can do offensively.
We're talking to Dabo Swinney, Clemson 1-0. You know, Dabo, the last 6 months have been so challenging for a lot of people in terms of their mental health and just kind of feeling worn down and beaten down by a whole lot of negative news. You're somebody who was always relentlessly upbeat. You've always got this positive energy and lots of it. I'm curious, what have the last 6 months been like for you, and how have you maintained that positive energy?
Yeah, well, it's been tough, just like it has for everyone, but you know, I mean, I'm 50 now, so I've got thick skin. I've had a lot of water going to the bridge, and I've had a lot of challenges along my journey of life. And you know, the one thing I've learned from all the challenges in life is that, you know, for me, it's always come back to my faith. And you know, I'm strong in my faith. God's always, you know, He's the great I am. He's not the great I used to could be, or I forgot about you, guy. He's still there. And, you know, sometimes we go through things in life we don't like, we don't understand. But you know, when you know, for me, you know, my anchor comes from the Lord, you know, that just helps me push through with anything and everything that comes my way. And just to try to stay grounded, to try not to get caught up in things that really don't matter or people who do not know me. You know, in my job, I mean, there's just people that they're going to hate me regardless of, they don't even know me. But that's just how, that just comes with the territory. And so, you know, I just try to just keep my eyes on the good Lord in the good and the bad. I think that's the important thing. It's not just the good, but you got to keep your eyes on the Lord in the bad too, and let him, you know, always say adversity will either, you know, define you, destroy you, or develop you. And that really is a choice. And if you have God in the center of your life, he'll use whatever adversity you're going through to develop you into something better. And so I hope that I'm no different than anybody else out there, you know, and just continuing to get better, continuing to grow. And you know, so it's been there's been some challenging times, but it's also been a lot of good. There's been a lot of good. You know, so I'm thankful. I think we have to be grateful for all things. That's what the good Lord teaches us, and that's what I try to do even when I don't like it. I always say God never says oops, and I hate that, but that's just kind of how I choose to live my life you know, keep on keeping on.
Dabo Swinney, my guest. I know you got to go to a meeting, so really quickly, let me ask you this. Was there ever a point in the offseason where you thought, and I understand you want to keep everything the main thing, and you want to focus on winning that one day, but did you ever think there was a good chance that the season might be postponed?
I did. There was a time. I really felt like we were going to play all along. I didn't. There were some times where I didn't really know how it was going to play out. But I just keep the faith, and that's kind of how I've always gone about my business. But that Saturday, I can't remember what day it is, but we had just started camp, and I got an email about I'm on this committee and have an emergency committee meeting on Monday morning. And then sure enough, I can't remember if it was that night or Monday or Tuesday or whatever, when the Big Ten canceled and all that stuff. And so that was the only time that I felt like we may not play, because I felt like, and it was becoming political and all this stuff. But you know what? That's when our guys stood up too. You know, there was one narrative out there at that time, and that was, you know, guys are being made to play, and it's all about money, and nobody ever wants to talk about, like, this is what we love to do. This is what we choose to do. And that's when the players kind of got involved and like, hey, you know, we want to play. And I'm thankful for the presidents and the ADs and the medical people that got together to give us the opportunity to play safely. And you know, my whole thing in the beginning was, if you can tell me that the virus goes away if we don't play, or if they're safer, great. But you know, I believe that's not the case, and I believe our guys are safer with us, and the results prove that for sure. So hopefully we can continue to, you know, be blessed by that. But there was a few days there where I wasn't real sure, but I'm glad it all worked out, and so another reason why we were all so emotional when we kicked it off.
He is the head coach at Clemson. They are number one in the country. They're 1-0, and they are hosting the Citadel on Saturday. He is Dabo Swinney. Dabo, great to have you back. Thank you so much. I appreciate this relationship, and I always appreciate the conversation. Great to have you back, Dabo.
Hey, thank you, Jim. Hey, all the best, man. Stay well.
Good night now!